I just read from my husband's mind a little bit.
Okay.
Is it about 5 minutes?
Okay, thank you.
All right, call me in order. You can do roll call.
Sure. Alatorre?
Here.
Hooker?
Here.
Juarez?
Here.
Angel?
Here.
Strong?
Here.
Zaker?
Here.
And Commissioner Caudillo is running a few minutes late.
Okay. All right, and no public comments? Maybe from the public? Okay.
So we're fortunate to have several members of our community services department here, which runs Parks and Recreation. We have Tim Farmer and Tracy Lamb, and who else did I see over there? Patricia Furman and Mary Radley. So,
good evening.
So I guess Mary typically gives an overview of the questionnaire, and then.
Yes, if you'd like me to do that. I saw that this time, Kim, you had sent a memo to all the group members with a little summary.
Yes.
Of the where we're up to. So the good news is that we are compliant with GMOC for parks in Eastern Chula Vista. That's the first thing to state. I did actually have a little question here, Kim.
Yes.
One of the bullet points down here, you talked about an updated facilities fees. Were you talking about the updated park development fee rates? Or was that something different?
It's
a different one?
Okay.
Okay, so that's all right then, it's not the same thing. But out of interest, this year there was an action to increase the park development fees that developers are charged, because we've been encountering rapidly increasing costs for park development and our pad fees weren't sufficient anymore. So that took place in August last year and became effective on October the 1st. So we are now charging higher pad fees. We're still struggling a bit, actually. The costs seem to go up faster than we can get our fees up there. So we have the required number of acres of parks in Eastern Chula Vista. We still don't, well, the GMOC edict doesn't actually cover Western Chula Vista, although we would like to achieve the same ratio of parks per 1,000 members of the population. We don't achieve that in Western Chula Vista, which is not really a surprise to anyone. We're still trying to look for park opportunities wherever we can. Looking to the 18-month and the 5-year forecast, again, Eastern Chula Vista, we stay in the positive in our park provision. So it looks like we'll be able to maintain that for quite some time, and we have additional parks coming on in the next 5 years, which will keep us well in that range. There was one slight adjustment. I assume that everyone is aware that the Parks and Recreation Master Plan was approved last year. That's this document. We're not familiar with it, and I actually did a handout here just with the location where you can go and find it online if you want to read it. So those could be passed around. They
Thank
did
you.
Some before the final approval of that. They did adjust some of the park acreages from what was reported last year. There was a slight adjustment down, actually. Because they identified that there were some areas adjacent to MS, or actually that were MSCP areas, which are basically preserves, which couldn't really be counted as park. They were not really usable. They didn't have the ability to put rec facilities on them. So there was an adjustment made before the Parks and Rec Master Plan was adjusted. And that adjustment's reflected in the figures here. Also, as they were doing for final round of the Parks Master Plan. I think they added and took out some other sites, and now the numbering of all the parks in the map is different from how it was last year. So I've updated that in your questionnaire. The existing parks exhibit, the one for the east and the existing park for the west, the existing park, the future park for the east and the future park for the west. They have all been updated now to match the approved Parks and Rec Master Plan with the same names and numbers on each one of those references. So if you're comparing it with last year, you might notice some differences. I think that is probably all I have to report apart from... I know a number of members of this commission were present, but the first phase of Montecito Park opened last April. So we're all pleased to get that on the ground. The next two parks coming up are going to be Orion Park and Strata Park in Millennia. The developer has recently actually had to rebid those projects. The first bid, they came in too expensive, and we did a small value engineering exercise. And now they're rebidding them and hope to start breaking ground, you know, within the next few weeks, actually. So those ones are coming on. They'll be the next ones to watch for. I think that's it for now. If you have questions.
What was the fee increase?
The PAD fee increase, it went from a... the cost, it's worked out on a cost per acre. It was about $5,550,000. Previously per acre, and now it's $750,000 per acre.
Okay. Wow, $200,000 per acre increase?
Mm-hmm.
Did I hear that right?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, and prices are really going extremely high. That I think it's the building industry is so busy. Contractors are charging what they like.
Mm-hmm.
We had an example where a custom restroom, which was really only like three toilet units and a bit of storage, came in at $800,000. So we're not building that. We're instead going to a prefabricated unit, which is going to be about $250,000. But yeah, prices are going through the roof at the moment. So...
And typically the cost of these parks are covered by the developers, right? As part of the
That's where they are, yes.
I mean,
the thing we refer as the PAD fee, that is a fee that is charged to the developers per unit that they build and that they have to pay to the city to develop parks or build the parks themselves to that value. Those are the two options.
I wonder how they develop.
How does that compare with the other the local jurisdictions like that PAD fee?
That's interesting. I don't have those figures handy. It would be interesting to know. Do you know any?
Yeah, no, but probably Connie.
San Diego groups their park fee along with their transportation and fire, so that's all grouped together, and it's really hard to parse out. But it's definitely much less than ours. Because we have that 3 acres per thousand threshold, we have something to quantify the amount that we really need to go forward. National City doesn't have one. Comparable ones would be Escondido, Carlsbad. Yeah.
I know that historically the city of Irvine has had much bigger fees than we have.
Yeah. Master plan meetings usually have them.
But the development community, because they have had so much difficulty, you know, building these parks, they were in support of the increase.
They were? Mm.
They were.
Mm. Well,
it's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if I just do the math, 3 acres per 1,000. So if the park is 3 acres, that's a $750,000 additional cost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and having worked with developers, they will pass that cost on to the consumer. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just shows up in property prices.
You can see
it's not that they're gonna. That's not gonna sit on their P&L.
Well, you saw the development on Millennial, right? Like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, that's where my concern is. I mean, it's just ultimately who will end up. It's really the residents, and we pay for it through cost of housing. So, but that's another conversation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anybody else have questions?
Mary, the replacement though for the bathrooms at Roar Park, the one that you got the bid on.
No, that wasn't the one we got the bid on. That hasn't got as far as going out to bid yet.
Okay. But some of those, I think, are Measure P. Some of the older.
Yes, there is. I believe there's a project underway with. I think the consultant is Kimberly Horn, mm-hmm. who is looking into developing designs for replacement bathroom at Roar Park. Mm-hmm.
So since these are, if I may, so these are considered city-owned parks once they're built? Is that how it's
keys are handed over?
Yes.
So the city will be responsible for maintaining them. So the maintenance costs, are they funded through general fund or is that some of the HOAs?
The majority of them are general fund.
Okay.
There are some exceptions to that. The Millennia development has an arrangement where 50% of the cost is generated from the CFD, the Community Facilities District, and 50% comes from the general fund. Hmm. And then I believe the Future Parking Freeway Commercial District is going to be 100% CFD funded.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
All right, next.
So we'll move on to fiscal, and we have our director of the building here, Mike Silva, to discuss the questionnaire.
So each year, the finance department works with the development service department to put together the answers to this questionnaire, and each year I get asked questions that aren't on here, so I thought I'd try to jump in right away. So last year we talked about a brand new fiscal impact analysis that the city developed using more current information related to household population for MFR, SFR, and how that's coming out. So our new model has been used several times over the last year, and we're finding it consistent with the messages that we brought in prior years, which is the commercial and retail side is lofting up the fiscal impact analysis results to make up for minor losses in single family and multifamily residential. So projects by themselves with just residential have been coming in at small negative numbers. That's consistent with what we're seeing in the general fund, which is governmental revenues are continuing to grow, but they're getting outpaced by governmental expenses. So if we set thresholds for what we want to have for public safety or public services and we establish and lock those in, the costs of those services over time are outpacing. We're hoping that legislation continues to chip away at that with sales tax legislation still pending. Nothing has really been decided in the state of California related to what something would be equivalent to a growth in sales tax related to online sales. So we certainly will keep reporting back to you and the city council on that, but right now California has not finalized any legislation that would significantly or materially impact our governmental revenues. But staff is here and available from both departments to answer any questions about the questions included in the questionnaire and about any of the questions related to the fiscal impact analysis model that we use for all of our developments, our SPA plan amendments.
Okay, I had one question on the FY18-19 projected. Is that right that you're showing a decrease? It looks like a decrease from 17, then again into 19.
A decrease in total revenues or total expenses?
Total revenues, projected revenues.
So there's a lot of components that go into that, and a lot of those are related to capital projects or one-time revenues, like bond proceeds. If we issued bonds in 2017 and then we're not anticipating issuing bonds in 2019. So we try to focus on government or general fund revenues for the most part, and then when we have like grant funds or one-time funds, those are sort of outlined in the discussion portion if we had bond issuance, which we had in 2017. For example, so if it's not clear in the report, certainly we'll try to do a better job at making sure it's clear. But I think we mentioned in the report about the bond proceeds in 2017.
Is this consistent revenue for a city our size?
No, we're the third lowest sales tax producing. We talked about that before. We've shared a few of the reports. Some of those are confidential, some of those are not. But basically, we get a report, and compared to the 20 agencies in San Diego County that report out from our sales tax consultant, we're the third lowest. So that just comes to years of development on primarily residential and not having a large base or sales tax base like a large auto mall or a large regional mall or a large manufacturing or employment hub. So those are all the results of that. And in prior years with the GMOC, we've talked about some of the efforts we're making. I believe you invited in Eric Crockett and talked to him about economic development efforts and some of the Bayfront projects and things like that that we believe will ultimately start to, you know, help us move in that direction. But as it relates to the development that we've got going on right now, whether that be Millennia or some of the infill projects, most of those include some form of housing, and that's just, we don't have a very high property tax rate that the city gets because a lot of the services are provided by other municipal agencies. And sales tax, because of how it's allocated, we suffer a loss compared to our competing agencies because of how the online sales work. The more we all shop online, the less Chula Vista gets.
Mm-hmm. What's the legislation or something like that that was trying to remedy that whole thing?
Yeah, there's three different pieces. Yeah. The Wayfair piece was one of the most significant ones, and that's pending with California, but they still don't know what the thresholds are going to be. Wayfair case used $100,000 as the threshold for you do not have to, if you're a small business that sells less than $100,000, then you would not be required to collect sales tax on out of state. And so that's California's deciding what that threshold's going to be, whether it's $500,000 or $1 million. That'll dictate how much new revenue we get. And then ultimately whether point of sale for online sales, this is different from the Wayfair case, but whether the point of sale for online sales is going to be allocated to the local agency as a whole directly rather than some of the distribution centers that we're used to in the state of California.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a bigger piece, but because cities have developed sales tax reimbursement agreements, which Chula Vista has used as well, like on the BMW dealership, those are definitely kind of up in the air, legally speaking, because these agencies made agreements based upon a certain understanding of revenue generated from the sales tax, and if all of a sudden the revenue gets diverted to other agencies, then that agency's covering the costs of providing services to them without receiving offsetting revenue.
Mm-hmm. Do you foresee another tax increase in the future?
The tax increase as far as the city...
Since we're so low, do you think there another one would be proposed, or...?
We're not allowed to propose anymore based upon current law. So with Measure A and Measure P, it's maxing out the city's ability to collect up to 2% of sales tax total. So there are exception cities, but they have to actually prove some very material changes to how their revenue stream works, and so there's more like industrial cities and things like that that have gotten those exceptions, but we don't have capacity or ability to move forward with any additional tax increases on the sales tax side. That's why the cannabis tax is an excise tax, it's not a sales tax, and any other taxes that we could go after publicly would be like a transient occupancy tax increase. So San Diego charges 12%, we charge 10, Anaheim charges 16. So, you know, the city, as it builds out Bayfront, could look at that as a revenue generator, since that's not developed from actual local residents. Those are, you know, transients or vacationers coming in. I'm sure there's other opportunities to tax, but as far as the two major ones, property tax and sales tax, there's nothing the city could do in addition to what it's already done to drive further revenue.
So we are capped at 2% what the city can receive? Right?
Every city in the state of California is capped at 2%.
Because we were receiving 1% before, and we've had 2 half-cent increases, but 100% of that comes back to the city, so we're capped at 2.
That's correct.
So the cannabis exercise, when do you anticipate that will show up on the city's P&L?
So we're not going to budget anything in 2020, but we will start receiving revenues in 2020. So with the current process, with the state of California still sort of being up in the air and how fast they're able to deliver permits, because they have to get licensed with the state of California before we can actually permit them to open here. And so best case scenario would probably be we get through the application process by July, August. They fly through the state process. They have a ready to move in, you know, building. They go through the permitting process and all the fire inspection and building inspection process, the security protocols. Probably by this time next year, you'd see your first one open. And so that's why the uncertainty related to that is why we would not budget for those revenues, because it'd be very easy for us to miss by 3 or 4 months. And so we're hopeful, and we've made public statements about the ultimate revenue stream coming to the city of $4 million or $6 million, but obviously that has to do with where the market's at and whether we do a good job now at picking the right operators. I can tell you from specific experience in going through this process right now is we have a good mix of applicants. So that's good for us. It's not just one or the other. We're getting the full kind of array of what the industry has to offer. And a lot of those aren't going to have like the public facing negativity related to it. So it's a testing environment or a manufacturer who isn't cultivating or isn't selling it. So we've got a pretty good mix. And so we're hopeful that we can hit the high side of what our estimates are. But ultimately, we need to get these good businesses in place and in the right locations.
Is that still going to be a cash business, or are they going to be able to do
right now? Right now, the majority of the industry is still cash. There's components of it that are illegally allowed to do banking, but not on the retail sales side. So the retail sales side right now, our department is going to have to come up with a way to safely obtain those cash. So right now, we're leaning towards collection with the police department. So literally having them come with their bags of cash to the police department with a finance associate there, and having like a dual control system in place. If you picture 12 locations and then you require monthly collections, and let's just say we do revenue similar to San Diego or Oakland or something like that, let's say we hit a target of $5 million. You divide that by 12, we'll be coming up with, let's say, $400,000 per month in revenue. You divide that by 12 locations, so you're talking about $30,000 per month per location. So it's not as big of an issue if we don't have a system in place, but we'll make sure that $30,000, because we've collected $30,000 before in cash for marijuana dispensary penalties, but it's not a daily basis. It's not a normal thing. So we're going to have to set up the internal controls within the finance and police department groups to make sure our staff are safe and that there's not any risks to the citizens that they would try to rob somebody, you know, attempting to go to it. But the minute they allow us to do either armored car delivery direct to a banking institution or another form of electronic payment, which the industry's trying to move towards, but it's just the federal banking regulations that are the hindrance right now. Everyone's a little scared of going down the banking route if they might get caught up in taxation or IRS seizure or something like that.
Can those funds be allocated for specific expenditures within the city, or do they have to go through just to the general fund?
The council can allocate general revenues however they want, including Measure A and Measure P. Obviously, we've set up committees for those, but right now we've made public statements saying that we are not going to earmark the marijuana for anything specific. That can change at any time, so council could change their opinion at any point in time, but my discussions with them and what finance department will be bringing in this budget cycle is this is the first year we hit our 15% reserve target. So that was mentioned in the 18 fiscal report that we took to council. And now we would like to establish another reserve fund, which is a pension reserve fund, so that any revenues that the city exceeds budgeted revenues over expenditures would flow into this pension reserve fund. And we're hopeful that cannabis revenue would also fall into that we wouldn't program any more than just what would be required for enforcement related to legal code enforcement and police to enforce the businesses that are there. And we're also going to have other revenues there, so the licensing fees haven't been established yet. So these permitted businesses are going to have to pay annual licensing fees, some cities $15,000, $20,000, $25,000 a year to obtain their license. That's going to pay for the police officers, the code enforcement folks, the finance folks, to go in and do, you know, quarterly and annual audits on their business. So I'm hopeful that if we can get to five $6 million in revenues, that most of that can be deferred towards a pension reserve fund.
So with all these numbers,
go ahead.
With all these numbers you threw out in these estimates, long term, I saw one of the questions we threw out there, we're still going to have some issues regarding shortfalls or financial shortcomings because of retirement and pension. But all these numbers were already calculated into that final number you put in the report?
No, the long-term financial plan that projects in year 10 that we hit, about $30 million deficit, Ed, in the final year of the plan. Yes. So we're seeing this, you know, $3 million a year kind of stepping problem over the next 10 years. None of that no marijuana cannabis revenue is included in the long-term financial plan because it was just passed. So that's part one of it, is we haven't been given an opportunity to present an updated public long-term financial plan, which we're going to do. But until council makes a policy decision and we actually start getting revenues in, we'll either keep the long-term financial plan estimates extremely low or non-existent until we have data that supports it. Because this is one of those industries, because of the controls and the fact that it's federally illegal, we don't want to be overly aggressive in saying we're going to make $5 million a year target, and then the IRS or the president or somebody like that comes in and says no more.
So is it, or one question, is there any state tax in that, or is it all city?
Well, there's a ton of state tax built into the cannabis industry. Our tax is not going to them.
Okay.
They have their own taxes that add on about 40% total to the
So they're going to have the same problem with collecting and processing that you'd have.
Yes, but so they have different power than we do. Normally, sales tax is collected by the state and transmitted back to the local agencies. Excise taxes like this, the city's responsible for collecting directly. So we do not benefit from cooperation with the California Department of Tax and Fee Administration. So it used to be the SBOE, the Board of Equalization. So though they collect the tax for everything else except this.
Okay.
So it would be nice if they actually could collect it for us and then share that out, but we're gonna have to collect it ourselves.
David, does the long-term financial plan, does that include the Bayfront expenses and revenue in there?
It includes some of the preliminary, and we modify that annually. So Ed's our budget manager over there, that's who I keep referring to. His team's responsible for working with development services and any updates to not only the components of the agreement for the Bayfront, but keeping an eye on the status of those ongoing negotiations, and any costs and timing is more critical than anything, when these things are going to get deployed. For example, one of the pieces to that agreement is transient occupancy tax related to the RV park, but it doesn't actually quantify a dollar amount because it's nebulous to when the actual RV park moves and opens and revenues generated and how much. And so those dollars have to be tracked, and the comptroller and the budget teams have to work together to make sure that at the end of the year the Bayfront project is receiving all the funding that was dedicated to that project. So yes, it is in there. It will be updated and keep being updated, so you will see the numbers change slightly because of the variance in the agreement. The agreement doesn't just say put $1 million aside and you're good. It says put $1 million and A, B, C, and D, and so we're making sure that all those things are happening as well.
And then real quickly, the reserve for pension, is that reflected in here as well?
It's not. That's a concept that we have been talking to city management about, and we wanted to wait until we fully funded the 15% operating reserve first. And so I mentioned it briefly at council Tuesday night. So when we presented our second quarter budget presentation, the mayor talked about hitting that reserve fund target that we've been working hard towards since the recovery from the recession. And then I brought up that staff will be recommending updated financial policies. So we've got two other financial reserve policies, and basically I'm recommending we push those down. So economic uncertainty and an emergency fund. So those two things have some money. One has no money, one has some money. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like pensions are a greater priority to the city at this point in time. Now that we have a fully funded operating reserve, if an unforeseen happened, we can always tap that as well. So those will be updated policies that will be included in the fiscal year 2020 budget presentation to council coming in the next few months.
Is that the point?
Dr.
since it's quiet, I guess I'll ask. So going back to the deficit, right, and the numbers, you know, a little scary. You go from 20 to like 40-something, right? You came up with these numbers by projecting the rise in expenditure for all these new officers and firefighters that have recently been hired. But is that separated for Measure A, and how do you separate that, like general fund expenditure, retirement expenditure? How do you divide that?
That's a great question, and we've been talking to the COCs about that a lot. So the Measure A Citizens Oversight Committee is responsible to make sure that we spend that money in accordance with what the intentions were. So the city, and it's actually, it was in a newspaper article today by the Union Tribune. So they're talking about how is the city being fair and consistent with the application of pension costs to those employees. So Measure A will only cover the portion of the pension costs related to the new employees hired by Measure A. So if Measure A hires 20 police officers, we're going to tack on what the citywide rate is per employee for that position. So if that's $15,000 or $20,000, or it's a percentage plus a flat dollar amount, then that's what that position will absorb, because that's what our accounting, our auditing firm recommends from a consistency practice. And it also makes it fair to the taxpayers, because we're not trying to solve our existing pension problems on the back of Measure A. We're trying to balance that out, but Measure A will always be balanced because it has a finite funding source. So if we run out of money in Measure A, we'll stop hiring, you know, or we'll stop filling. But the general fund has a different problem. The general fund is on the hook. It's the backstop if something bad happens. So if Measure A runs out of money and then all of a sudden pension costs spike some more, the general fund's still going to be on the hook for any shortcoming there. So those projections you're talking about, the one fallacy with long-term financial planning is it's composed of today's dollars, but when we balance the budget for 2020, we got to rewrite the whole thing again, because now we've either structurally or used one-time funds to balance the current year. So we can never get to 2025 and have a $20 million deficit. It's just a forecasting tool that tells us if revenues keep growing at 2% and expenses keep growing at 3.5%, you know, here's what we're going to be at. Or if pension costs don't get contained, here's going to be, you know, some of the outcomes that come from that. So I don't believe that we're ever going to be looking at a $30 million deficit from a budgetary standpoint, but it's still a serious and significant number, especially when you consider Measure A and Measure P, because those are isolating those funds for a specific purpose, and they don't make it available to us. We're not planning or going to be using those funds to just solve other problems. So that means the bucket of money that I can use towards solving the pension problems is finite. It's small. So if we're not going to reprioritize certain things, then we've got a very limited bucket of money to be able to tackle the pension problems.
Yeah, I just really feel that's important to get out there, kind of clear up a bit of a misconception of where the money's going to go, and paying all these new officers and firefighters.
Any more questions?
I'm having a hard time getting excited about a bunch of red numbers. But it's kind of the first time, second time I'm looking at this, I'll be honest with you. I run a company, I don't... If I see a red number, I'm
with you there.
I understand. I mean, the city is the city government, but this is just a general comment since we've been asked to sit here and give some comment. I can't wrap my head around.
Well, did you get to page 13 where they show the debt?
I understand this is a forecasting tool. I get it. I have a little bit of a financial background, but still, I'm wondering if.
I think the best way to articulate it is you look at how the federal government runs the Social Security system, and it used to be fully funded, and then changes happen and people live longer, and that's what actuaries do with CalPERS. Yeah. So there's been twice in the last 20 years where CalPERS was fully funded. So this same group would be hearing a very different presentation in 2000 and 2007. So whether we're at the bottom of the market or the top of the market, I can't tell you that, but that's what's dictating those red numbers, because actuaries are recalculating those numbers on an annual basis based upon what the condition is of the market right now as a result of investment decisions over the prior year. So they still want to believe that they're going to hit their investment targets. I think they're lofty. I think I think that it's very difficult to continue to hit targets when our economy is being driven on debt. You know, our federal government, even our state government, is run off of debt, and eventually someone's going to have to come in and pay for those things, whether it's Social Security, Medicare, or just federal budget spending. So I'm not optimistic that 7 and 8% returns are realistic anymore like they used to be for all of us. Just put it in the S&P 500, 10% return every year, you're good to go. I think the market's telling us a different story over the last 15 years that it's not going to be that easy.
Yeah. And I'm with Max. I mean, I run a company too, and I mean, when is our city going to start making tough decisions? I mean, you know, the pension obligations, they're just going to get worse and worse. I mean, I'm in wealth management. I mean, this market's going to crash again, you know, and those numbers are just going to get worse. I mean, they're going to increase almost 100% in, what, the next 10 years? From 29 million to 49 million?
Yeah.
That's not even factoring in bad markets. So,
right.
I mean, that's just one aspect. So, I mean, I just think a lot of tough decisions need to be made, and I'm not sure that we're seeing it. And I'm not even saying where they need to be made, because I'm not privy to all the information, but, you know, we just need to start operating more efficient at the city level, you know, in various aspects.
Well, I think city government in general don't operate efficiency. That's probably the problem.
Well, exactly.
I
mean, it's a lot of,
and
then
that against you guys. No.
Yeah.
I mean, I do federal government stuff, and
yeah,
you know, it's the same thing. You know,
yeah,
you spend the money or you lose the money.
Yeah, because eventually, I mean, we're going to be at crisis level, and then that's when really big problems hit, and then we're forced to do things, laying off people. You know, I mean, that's what we don't want to do. But so it's a balancing act, tough decisions.
I can tell you two things that council members have said publicly about that, because they certainly do want to address the issues. Some of the sales tax legislation that we're talking about would be several million dollars. You know, so them throwing their weight behind legitimate legislative change is something that we might be able to see and come to fruition in the next couple of years. The second is pension reform. Those issues keep coming back up. And
right.
So the single biggest factor related to that unfunded liability isn't just the discount rate, it's the future earnings rate of all of the members. And so the California rule has been in question now for several years. And so what the public belief is that you'll see in the Sacramento Bee or some of the articles that have been talked about the California rule is, at some point, too many agencies are going to get to a tipping point where they can no longer afford to provide public safety services and general governmental services, and not including all the services that are more than nice-to-haves, which Maria has gone on record several times saying, you can close all the libraries and all the rec centers and all the stuff, but they do such a good job at offsetting costs that you'd be shutting down, you know, 80% of the rec activities to save $1 million. You know, so you don't get a lot of bang for your buck by going after those things. We spend most of our money on public safety. And those agencies that are primarily public safety are going to start looking at financial crisis. And I've seen cities go through this. When I was in Riverside County, Moreno Valley was firing police officers every year of the recession from 06 to 2012. Every year they balanced their budget on 15 more officers have to go, 20 more officers have to go, 15 more. And you could see the effects in the community as that was happening, and that was just a housing crisis, obviously a huge recession, but up there it was magnified because of that housing-related impacts in that area. So what the belief is from city management and council is that if we make concerted efforts towards supporting specific sales tax legislation, let's see what the state is going to do when more agencies are kind of backs against the wall related to pensions. And if they remove the California rule like in 2022, and required that agencies all kind of resort to PEPRA level pensions on a go forward basis, you'd see our net pension liability cut in half. Like it would just, you know, $400 million goes back to $200 million. The payment drops, you know, $6, $7, $8 million that year, and half or more of that red ink just goes away the day that decision's made. But PEPRA in and of itself only was towards tier three, or the newest tier of employees. And so there's people sitting in this room that are in all three tiers. You got the people that have been grandfathered in, you have the people that have transferred in, and you have the people that are brand new to government. And you know, the system itself is very bifurcated in that way, because you have people that are costing the city $20,000 more for the same position just because of the benefits they've been all grandfathered into. So that's where ultimately some of those bigger $30 million decisions are going to get either solved or not solved, and you'll see agencies having to cut to the bone if they don't have a solution to the pension problems, because you're not gonna find it a sales tax. And I agree with you, sir, that they're not gonna have a stock market keep going up forever. You're gonna have another recession.
Yeah, unfortunately, at some point.
I'm trying to find something positive in here, so stay with me. I'm generally a positive person. But I'm also trying to unpack this. This is a lot of stuff just on one page. I'm just trying to unpack it. So here's my thought on this. You know, I serve as a planning commissioner, and I'll tell you, I push back at residential developers all day long, because they come to us with all these phenomenal residential projects. When I ask them, well, all you're doing is really, you're increasing our overhead. Where is the revenue? Oh, and they give me all these projections that over 7 years we're bringing millions of dollars into the city revenue, and I'm not seeing it here. I'm seeing your revenue going up by an average of 1.7% annually. In fact, if I look at 2020 and I look at 2028, I'm looking at an average of a marginal increase in revenue. But then I've got all these noise in my ear what the developers have been telling me, that go ahead and approve this project and we promise you that all these new homes are going to bring these millions of dollars into the city revenue. There's a disconnect. I don't know. I'm trying to make sense of this. So I either have to go back to a planning commission and really go on record and say, well, hold on, let's put a stop to development, which is not a good idea. We want to continue to grow. But we're going to have to figure out a way that revenue has to come in. So I happen to be of a mindset that I don't always focus on cutting costs, because I believe that we have some very smart and diligent people on city staff who are really looking at for efficiency. I really generally believe that. I like to shift the conversation of economic development bringing additional revenue. I think that's where the conversation ought to be. I mean, you could squeeze dollars all day long, but there's a cost to running a city of this size. Mm-hmm. I'm just not seeing the revenue coming in. So again, sales tax legislation is a part of it, but it's a bigger economic development conversation. So I, you know, perhaps for next year, it would be wonderful that at the same time we have our economic development director, because really this conversation, we got to hook this up. To me, there's a disconnect. So again, I'm sorry that I'm jumping around and I'm a little kind of agitated, because we're just approving these residential projects left and right, and we got them on the it's just becoming a bedroom community. And if the revenue, you're not including that in your projections, I'm assuming there's a good reason for it. We may be going the wrong way about building a successful, livable, financially sound city. So again, I just want to kind of throw that out there as a GMOC commissioner. Again, it's not within our purview to change policies, but we're certainly here to help advise and recommend to our elected officials to really take a harder look at this. So next time a developer comes and makes us all these great statements, you know, tell us what we want to hear. I think we ought to dig a little deeper and say, well, prove to us how that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. So on that note, the city was using an old fiscal impact model, and the old model showed that residential was profitable to the city. So when we updated that model, it flipped. So it said, with current public safety costs, current pension costs, current health care costs, and current service level requirements adopted by council, it no longer pencils residential by itself. So one of the issues is we have all this legacy cost, right? We built out the city the way it is now. So even when developers come in now and we use the new model, they're still required to have that thing balance, meaning the revenues that project generates in the new model are forecast to cover the costs of service related to those new constituents coming in from that model. It's not requiring them to provide extra revenue to the city. So it's not going to make up for any of those legacy costs that are already built in. So the only requirement right now is we're not going to go to a council with a project that loses the city money. But having a developer have to create profit to the city is unfair from a standpoint of that's not something that the purpose of development isn't to create profit, it's to cover its own costs for its own, you know, for its own section of the city. So the economic development side is right on, and I believe you guys have a separate meeting with the economic development department where you bring him in, but that has little to do with new development as it relates to housing and you know, it's looking at redevelopment or it's looking at areas that are not currently developed and going after those and zoning those or conditioning those that they bring more jobs, bring more retail sales, or create some type of industry that will layer onto itself for future revenue growth. But as far as the zoning and all of the areas that are already pre-planned for commercial residential, that's all going to at least break even. But is it going to solve, you know, 50 years of zoning and specific decisions that were made at that time, maybe based upon numbers that said that, you know, 30 years ago, before 1999, I would argue that the old model worked just fine, you know, and then pensions got spiked, everyone got better benefits, and so overnight, all of those calculations that were done years before were no longer applicable, just millions of debt created overnight by some of those decisions.
Like I said, it's not a business.
I mean, we're giving up too much employment land, so. But again, we'll save that discussion when Eric is here. So.
Yes. Okay. Any other questions? Well, thank you very much. Very informative.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Now we need to discuss any potential issues or recommendations for Parks and Rec.
I have nothing for Parks and Rec. I think they're doing a good job.
I did have a follow-up, though. I'm not sure if it's a question, a questionnaire, or the tour we took over to Loma Verde, the Loma Verde Rec Center.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of like a follow-up on that. Is there money going from the general fund to that? Is there money from Prop P to that? Is there going to be a combination of that?
Right now, we're looking at Measure P funding and leveraging that with future grant opportunities. So we're kind of in a money gathering mode. So the project itself is too big to be able to tackle with current allocations from Measure P. So I think the numbers have been floating around between $2 and $3 million that we had dedicated for that facility in Measure P, but that's not going to be enough to get the substantial portion that needs to get fixed.
And who has the final say as to whether it's a refurbished project or a brand new project, like a brand new building?
Well, council would have the final say, but Measure P wasn't intended to enhance. It was intended to replace or renovate. So if we're going to add square footage or what have you, that's why we're looking at grant opportunities to leverage those Measure P dollars, and we'll talk to the COC about that in detail. But it is one of those things where, as you renovate, it is becoming better because the technology is better. You know, the HVAC is more expensive, but it's better. You know, but we're not intending on increasing the size of the pool, for example, but we are looking at potentially increasing the size of the gymnasium, so we'd consider using maybe DIF dollars. So there's nothing that's off the table right now as far as funding sources that we're trying to go after, but zero general fund dollars has been dedicated to that project to this point.
And when will those decisions be made?
Those will all have to go to the Measure P COC and to City Council for a CIP budget document, and depending upon, we're going to do multiple public workshops and outreaches. So Leilani Hines right now is the lead on that project for the city. And so she'll be doing extensive work, working with several of us in this room on that project. There's about 20 of us in the room in the first meeting to see what the community wants, what they need, what we can do. And right now the focus is on, can we leverage some grant dollars? How can we go out and get $5, $6, $7 million in grant money so that we can make something happen?
Are there any other facilities in that condition? Because we were surprised when we saw that condition.
I can't say for sure, but not of that magnitude. Mm-hmm. Not of, I mean, that facility probably needs $17 to $20 million. I don't know that any other. I mean, the police facility is huge, and you know, even though it's only 15 years old, it's still, you know, the upkeep and renovating things like that is expensive, but not in anything in disrepair like that. Not of that size.
Okay. What priorities is that? That's pretty high on the priority.
Very high on the city management and council's priority list, but. Which one's the highest priority? I would say that we're knocking out the highest priority, which is keeping the pool in operation. Mm-hmm. So that means a lot to the folks in the rec department. So we stopped. We were moving a little fast in the beginning. We stopped and said, okay, we're going to get the lights to meet code, so it's not a safety issue anymore. We're going to replaster it next fall, right in between seasons or something like that. Try to close it down for a month and then reopen. But you know, if we're going to do a new deck or expand it or new plumbing and all that kind of stuff, that's ripping up and tearing out, and there's a lot more to that. So that's going to be a pretty major project when that comes about. So right now, that's the priority.
Okay. Does the city ever consider naming rights for publicly owned facilities? Has that ever been done?
The best example is what San Diego did with their lifeguards, that Toyota basically paid for all their lifeguard trucks. But that's been brought up many times in our council kind of brainstorming sessions in the long-term financial plan about innovative revenue-generating ideas. So picture every park being like a school where all the fencing is covered in banners and things like that, and you charge them $500 a year. Those are decisions that have to be made at council level and kind of asked of staff to go about, but we don't, I mean, maybe Tim Tracy can talk about some of the park side usage, but I'm not aware of any program we have now.
Not currently, no, but we're exploring some opportunities. We have some small amenity upgrades into some of our parks that we're looking at, exploring the opportunity of having a naming rights there, but that would also have to go to council before we can do that.
So you would need to get direction from the city council in order to pursue those type of opportunities. Is that what I'm hearing?
We would have to establish fees or whatever our charges are.
But I mean, what would be like the first step? I'm just trying to say, you know, what is the first step that has to happen in order for?
There might have to be a policy change, wouldn't it?
I think there's a municipal code.
There's a municipal code.
Or a municipal code change.
Because currently it doesn't include parks.
Right.
So it has to be amended to include parks and rec centers. It does have streets, and there's certain naming rights to go to that we're looking at how we have that amended, bring it to the council to amend the code, and then we can move forward with naming rights.
But the reason why I ask is, I mean, again, if you look at YMCA, it's a good example. They are phenomenal at naming rights. If you look at YMCA facilities, and again, I look at examples where it has been done effectively, and you know, just begs the question, given our current state of revenue and the needs, because we all went on that tour, we didn't like what we saw. You know, is there something else that the city council can do to really kind of get ahead of this instead of having to wait and say, well, we got a $17 million deferred maintenance issue, let's throw $1 million bucks at it. That's not going to make a difference. It's going to do a small little dent. So that's what I'm asking, is are there other opportunities that perhaps we could help, as GMOC kind of recommended the city? So again, all this is, we're here to help you. We want to get you guys what you need to.
To answer the Loma Verde party a little bit, which is the fact that we have certain problems, and we know that it's probably going to be a 3-year fix. Let's just be honest. Through grants and going out to get public-private partnerships to really solve this huge problem, because it really needs a complete overhaul. It needs to be torn down and rebuilt properly so it can really service that community in the west side of Chula Vista. In order to do that, we've got to spend a little Prop P money to shore it up so it's still usable for a community that really takes advantage of that wonderful center. And these people are very appreciative of the programming, because these people have never come to complain. These people like the services that are going there. They need the services that are going there, these parents and these children. So we got to shore that up.
And then at the same time, we're looking at grant opportunities and then doing exactly what you said, which is how we know about it. We're looking at how to find the right foundations or different organizations that will help fund it so that we can get the amount of money that we need, anywhere between $11 and $15 million. At the same time, we're going to go out and reach out to the community, making sure it's what they want, how they want it, and what programming and services they want within that. So that's going to take a little time because it's not going to just happen like that. So we're looking at this long-term plan of Loma Verde. It is, for us, a very big problem. And at the same time, we're looking at Prop P solving some issues, but we still have to look at deferred maintenance ongoing that Prop P will not fix. So we've got a number of issues that we're going to be looking at. But I hope that answers your question on Loma Verde, because it's an excellent point. You know, we don't like it looking like it was a reform school or whatever you want to call it. It's not our idea. We know that we service the right community. So it's just coming up with the right plan so that when we do it right, and because we're only get one shot at this. And well, so that's our plan.
And I think one item that concerned me was the young lady that worked there. You know, she was showing us video of her phone of when it rained. And, you know, they had the big trash cans, and they were putting them into the different spots to capture the water. It was a mess. You know, there's no other way to explain it. But, you know, how are we helping them today? I mean, we had a lot of rain the past couple of weeks. You know, are they still out there with the trash cans trying to capture the rain so they don't get flooded in? Or is there something being done today to help patch it? You know, I know it's a Band-Aid, but
we've got more Band-Aid projects coming through Measure P, not specifically related to that facility. Cause just like we had flood damage here at City Hall, we're going out and taking the appropriate measures immediately where it needs to, and then they're going on a larger Measure P project for roof replacements. But that facility is really being considered secondarily because we don't want to replace the roof and then tear it down. Mm-hmm. Right. And so we're trying to be methodical about what level of repair do we do, what's the right size Band-Aid right now for that facility so we don't waste Measure P dollars, but we keep it functioning. So we're probably going to deploy every resource we can towards the different size Band-Aids on that project.
There's been a few roofing contractors the last couple of weeks that Public Works has sent out to identify how much it is going to expend to Band-Aid it. But it is not a complete roof replacement.
Right, right. And I'm not saying complete replace. I just, you know, it was sad to the videos and what they go through just to keep the place open.
I wonder how it looked like in the last 2 or 3 years with all the rain.
Yeah,
and Parkway looked the same way 3 years ago, and the animal care facility looked the same way. So it's like there's examples that they've been that bad. Parkway was full of trash cans when we would go there 3 years ago. So
okay, well, that's on the top of the list. I think that's good to know. And you know, it was, like I said, it was just very sad. You know, this employee really love working there, and you know what they go through to get it maintained is really bad. So, but I guess back to the subject, Parks and Recs. I didn't have any comments. I mean, I think they're doing great. Okay.
So no recommendations on the Parks and Recs.
Nope.
Alrighty. We can move on to fiscal.
Fiscal, I'm with Max. I got concerns, but I got to think of how to word it.
Mm-hmm.
To me it's there's a wall coming, but I think everybody realizes it, but I don't think everybody knows what to do with it. You know, and that's the problem. You know, and I don't think there's any. You know, being from the commercial side, I know how to run a business.
Mm-hmm.
You can't run the government like a business.
But being from the government side, working for the county, I hear the strategies that they're trying to put in place, like with the reserves.
Yeah.
That's huge. Like,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
having that policy change and saying, you have excess revenue, I'm going to put it here. I mean, and build that into a policy so it doesn't change. Like, that's a big deal. And then as long as what you say as far as the policymakers fighting for those reforms at the state level, at the federal level, that's huge too, because you know, there's only so much you can do from the government side when you have those obligations coming from the state. You know, so you know, I can see the strategies that they're trying to do. I think they see the wall, and they also have strategies that are trying to put in place. But I'd like to hear more about what the elected officials are actually trying to do you know, at the state level with CalPERS and PEPRA and all that stuff. You know, what's the strategy there? What's the political
thing? Right, because it's a default, domino effect.
Yeah.
So would that be a recommendation? Like as a follow-up on specific strategies to cut the deficit? Specifically the reserve plan?
Yeah, that would be
And you know, they talked about the deficit and the retirement plan, the pension plan, but we don't really talk about the healthcare costs. You know, because that's my background, and so I'm curious to see if there's any projects or in the pipeline that are considering a real change in healthcare expenditure, and like thinking outside the box. And right now we're talking about it. I have an example. I used to go to school in Las Vegas. A good friend of mine wound up working for a big union out there, the Culinary Union. Culinary Union has enormous amount of pull. They established their own network of healthcare systems that they provide for all their employees, all their pension employees. And so they managed to reduce healthcare costs by millions of dollars. I don't know how that model would work here in California, or it's just an idea of a possible way of thinking outside the box and bringing, you know, cheaper costs, medication costs, doctor costs, insurance costs. I just want to see something in the pipeline as a project.
So you're talking about the city being self-insured?
Almost like kind of the idea that the chief, fire chief, gave us when he was talking about how they outsource the ambulances to a third company, and now they're trying to take that business on themselves. I mean, that's a great model there. I think that a way the city could save some money there. But you know, kind of going on that, what else can we do to be self-sufficient?
So the city actually takes some pretty extraordinary measures that most cities don't take. Most cities will either bid out the services every 5 years or default to CalPERS healthcare rates. Our city has been bidding out healthcare every year. So our broker literally goes to the market, and so the last 2 years we've mitigated huge projected increases in healthcare costs and got those down to nothing this year, for example, a 0% increase when we were projecting a 15%. And the year before, it only ended up being like 7 or 8. It's all different by group, and there's different cost-sharing agreements with each of the unions. But the point is, even though we know the healthcare industry is sort of unsustainable from a federal and state standpoint, we are doing everything we possibly can to contain those costs for our employees. And so we're not seeing right now the growth. And we also believe that we're reaching sort of like the housing market in general, where it's like you can't go up at this crazy rate forever, so you're starting to see a plateau effect where the federal government's stepping in on some of the pharmaceutical costs and some of the special care, and then you're looking at the high deductible plans and some of the other ways that the Kaisers and the Aetnas are being more efficient. So we're hopeful that it'll kind of revert to the mean of 4 or 5% price growth per year instead of double digits. And that's what our broker is saying too, that we're going to start seeing more sustainable. Even 4 or 5% is high, but it's not as crazy about, you know, how much we pay when we saved $1 million this year, almost $1 million this year by not having that 15% increase as opposed to zero.
What is the total unfunded pension liability right now for the city?
Right now, it's $340 million.
Unfunded? And are we paying any kind of penalties or anything on that?
We pay interest.
Interest. Do you know what that amounts to?
If you look at the amortization schedule, I've got it's probably around $12 or $13 million a year.
So we're paying about
Million? 7% on... We're paying over 7% on that $330 million a year. So what's that, 20...
So we're paying about $1 million a month.
Yeah, probably close to almost $2 million a month.
$2 million a month on that unfunded liability. Mm-hmm. Wow.
And it's going to grow by about 30%, even if they hit their targets, just by them lowering their investment return rate. So over the next 2 years, you're going to see that number go from 330 to 500.
So how much was that again? What did you say, 349?
340.
340? I thought it was 170.
That's one. There's two plans that make up that number. It's almost 50-50. One is the miscellaneous employees, and one is public safety.
Oh, okay, so that was just the one then. Okay, that's why.
And for comparison purposes, in end of fiscal 17, it was 295, so it went up about 40 million.
Well, it's going to continue to grow. It's not a static number.
Right.
It changes every year based on how they did in the stock market.
Yeah, no, right.
And
cool.
So
which
I just didn't know. Wow.
That's a big number.
Yeah, it's a huge number. Okay.
Are we talking about recommendations?
Yes.
Again, I don't know if it belongs here or not, but just going back to, I like to, for us to recommend to the city council that we get really intentional about a kind of a robust capital campaign, naming rights to specifically fund these type of facilities, such as the one that we're talking about. Because my concern is, we may never get there. I mean, we need something impactful, and quite frankly, looking at the city budget, I just don't see how that's going to happen. And again, my rationale behind it is there's a model. There's several nonprofits that are very good at doing this, and we know San Diego is really the capital of some amazing philanthropists, and I mean they're right here in our own community. I bet you some of them are in the city of Chula Vista. We just haven't asked.
Mm-hmm.
So I would, but rather than just saying it, I like to put it in a form of a recommendation that really goes before our elected body, and so that they could kind of get intentional
yeah,
about
that's
it.
A great idea. That's a great
and maybe that
idea.
Will help.
Okay. And then if I could just steer you back to the threshold standard, are you satisfied that it is in compliance? There's actually two threshold standards for fiscal. And the first one has to do with the PFFPs that at the time they're adopted shall ensure that new development generates sufficient revenue to offset the cost of providing municipal services and facilities to that development.
I think that, based on what you said, it's they pay for themselves, but don't pay for extra. So I think
mm-hmm.
that's in compliance.
And then, of course, they did provide all the DIF information
yep.
that is required. Any other recommendations?
Nope, they're good there.
Okay. Very good.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen. That was very informative.
Thank you. All right.
Okay, move on to the next item. Action and minutes from the previous meeting.
So I believe we sent out four sets of minutes for you to review from previous GMOC meetings.
It's June, September, October, and November.
Yeah, the one in June was actually to go over the questionnaires for this year. Normally we have that meeting in May, like right after the workshop, but I forget, for some reason we had to postpone it. And in September we met with Maria Cacciadorian, representing the city manager's office. And we had a couple of meetings for the topics. October,
the June 1, June 21st. Okay, yeah, that's the one I was after that. So I'll take your guys' word for it if that one's good.
Okay. Motion to approve.
Okay. Any seconds?
Like.
Okay. The September 20th. That was the city manager update and our election. Okay, I remember that.
Are you looking for different motions for each?
Or do you want to do more at once? Or?
I think we could do one.
Oh, you just want one.
All right, October 18th. That was water and sewage. Okay, then November 1st. And that we're here quarterly. Okay. Motion to approve.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Second.
Okay.
Very good. I do not have any comments. Any other staff have any comments?
No. Any commissioner comments?
Yeah, I was going to ask. So we were going to talk to the fire department about coming back in about that calculation on his
percentile versus
percentage.
I think we were going to just in next year's questionnaire ask them to change the way that they reported it. Can look back at the minutes, but do you recall?
I think we decided that, but we also wanted to bring him in to talk to them because there was a discussion about whether they were compliant or non-compliant.
Yeah,
I mean, I think in some of our eyes, they were non-compliant because they were doing the percentile by the percentage.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you just take the fire stations and add them up and divide, they're non-compliant. But what they were doing was statistics with it.
Yeah, because I think the concern was that the way they were calculating would have made them non-compliant.
Mm-hmm. So you feel that you need to have the fire department return before finalizing the report?
Unless they want a surprise. I mean, I in my mind, they're not compliant.
I think it me too. I think they are.
I mean, just because of the way the threshold says it's percentage,
yeah,
not percentile.
Because here's the thing, guys: if we don't get it right, what's going to happen is. Let's just say that our hunch is right, and let's say they're non-compliant, and then they correct it, and then next year they're going to come back and be non-compliant, and then it's going to look even worse because then they're going to be flip-flopping back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
It's better to get it right now, to get it straightened out now.
Okay.
Because we caught it last year, and we all did the math, and we're like, okay, the first time they used percentile,
exactly.
Let's see what happened. But, I mean, it came again this year, and I think it's still... I mean, in my mind, they're non-compliant.
Yeah. And then not only that, I'm not sure what is depending on, their finances might be riding on the... They may not get certain funding because they're compliant. But if they're not compliant, maybe they get more funding, too. I'm not really sure how that's going to work, but it might mean something from that aspect. It may not, but I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm.
But nonetheless... If they're going to keep flip-flopping back.
I think the discussion, this is kind of how it went, because when they came to us last year, when we were in the process of kind of advocating for measure A, well, B, and then A, well, the discussion was very different. That, we're the lowest staffing city, we're not in compliance, and obviously that was kind of the driver that really got our attention. And I think they did a very good job at advocating.
Right.
But then when they came back, I think that we heard something different. So I was trying to kind of say, wow, did we really grow that much from year to year that you're not suddenly compliant? So I think that prompted us to start asking a little more questions about the matrix, the way it was designed, just as a refresher. So my recollection is that we said, well, next year, go ahead and add that new matrix in there, but that we really wanted a recalculation based on what you're saying to really see, are they in fact in compliant or not?
Because I understand the math they did. I mean, I understand what they did, why they did it. It makes sense, puts them in compliance. But really, that's not the standard that was written down.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't talk percentile statistics.
Right.
It just basically you have these stations, that do they meet this when you add them all together.
Right.
Did they say that they were doing it to be, to align themselves with the way that some other government was measuring? Was it the state example that
no.
they were following?
And we've just
something.
Yeah,
they were. Yeah, they were following some
yeah,
other.
There was something there, but
yeah.
I didn't understand it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he mm-hmm. right something, but it was a way that they calculated it though. They didn't.
But they were following a. They were following a model that was already in place.
Yeah,
right.
I think
know
it
was
a
state or
state
county or
yeah. it was
right.
some other entity.
They also said they were going to provide us with their statistical model, which they never did.
Right.
I think they should need to come back in. We need to get that score.
Or
because
okay, well,
we're going to be presenting this to council, and I'm not going to feel comfortable. I mean, if they're
right. I mean, I don't want the chief to think, you know, at the joint conference that we're going to throw him under the bus. I mean, as long as he knows it's coming, okay.
Yeah, this, exactly. Then we may have to do some schedule changing because I'm not sure when they're going to be available to come in, and the draft report is supposed to be at our next meeting in 2 weeks. So
maybe they're available for the first 20 minutes of our meeting.
Okay, then that portion of the report will probably have to have a couple of different drafts depending on how that would turn out.
Is a conference call possible, maybe, where they don't have to come in on our next meeting, but just to be able to where we can call them and we're all here?
I think I'd feel more comfortable having a representative in person.
Yeah, I think in person would be better.
Yeah.
And like I said, I just want to make sure
I think as long as we give
he understands our reasoning why we have concerns.
Yeah.
You know, and that, you know, when we have a joint session, he doesn't feel like he's been thrown under the bus.
Mm-hmm. Right. Better just do it.
Right.
Do it
up front, and
exactly.
you know, he knows it's coming.
Exactly.
Right. Okay, so I'll see if I can get them to come to our next meeting.
Okay.
Yep.
Any other?
Yeah, and then one other thing, I'm not sure if this is the right time to do it, but and I'm not sure if it got put in there or not, but when we had the libraries and they were talking about doing the revenues from the passports.
Mm-hmm.
Did we put in there that we wanted this split? Because I thought, did we?
We're going to put that into the next question.
Yeah.
Okay, so we weren't going to do it for this round then, or for this?
No, because it just the money just all got absorbed.
Okay, so was for
no
the next.
So the next questionnaire,
yeah.
we specifically asked
is that.
That
we did? Okay.
And then, but this one, we were going to make a recommendation of, and I think it's in the notes.
That's what I mean. So the recommendation
that it should stay with the libraries twice going.
And we put in the split and everything that we did? That's what I was getting.
Well, that's what
we're
going to clarify when we finalize the report.
The report,
one
okay.
Of the shirts.
Okay, so we did actually.
So we wanted them to identify what that split was.
Yes.
In writing.
Okay.
And then, but still recommend that any money they collect for doing that stays with
them. Okay, I just want to make sure it did go forward
right.
into that. Okay, all right.
But I think that's what we added.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you were here for that.
I think I missed that one. Yeah.
So the
yeah.
library... in Chula is the number one.
Oh, I was at that one.
Okay,
and they brought all that revenue.
Passport processing.
Yeah. Right, from the revenue, from the
right.
passports.
Right.
Which surprised all of us, but they don't keep that money.
Right.
Yeah.
Where does it go?
General fund. Right, right. You know, if they're generating this money, they should keep it in my mind. But.
Which library was it?
The one in Otay.
They produce a lot of passports. I was shocked.
I got to get one, so.
Yeah,
might as well go there.
Yeah. They generate enough money. Go to another one.
Okay, let's open up another center.
Okay, any other comments?
Just a quick minute. I want to pass out this updated spending plan for Measure P, just so everybody has it. I just want to highlight.
Your one page.
Oh, one page. It's just one page. I just want to highlight quickly. There was a significant change in the timing of some funds. The total budget stays the same, but if you look halfway down sports courts and park infrastructure, you see some negatives. Those projects have been pushed back because it's taken a little longer to bid them out, and they have a lot of work going through Public Works. And then you can see an $8 million for pavement. They got some good bids on pavement, actually eight again. They got good bids on pavement, and they're just going to lap it into two big $8 million contracts. So we're actually going to see a lot of pavement happening over the next year. And then some of the sports and courts and park infrastructures is going to be delayed a couple of years. So same budget, it's just moving of timing.
It's moving a month, 5 years.
I heard all this rain has created 45,000 potholes in San Diego. Oh,
I think I hit two of them coming here.
So, a lot of.
If you drive Harbor Drive, all 3 days are a mess.
Harbor Drive,
all
right. That's why
yeah, that's like go to Harbor Drive to the point.
Our
and
poor
it's
city,
just a mess.
That's all we needed was this rain.
Okay, thank you. Any other commissioner comments?
Oh, Director Jones. Oh. Huh?
No. So that was next thing. So next meeting is when? Yeah.
March 7, I believe.
Yep, March 7.
March
7. 6 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. Same time, same place. Let's see if it's raining.
Okay. Thank you, everybody.